Part 3. Choices. Chapter 12. Questioning COVID. The first case of illness attributed to a contagious organism called coronavirus occurred in China in November 2019. The illness appeared in the United States in January 2020. By the end of June, halfway through the year, health officials could cite 10 million cases with a half a million deaths worldwide. The official numbers in the United States are about 2.5 million cases with 126,000 deaths, or a death rate of about 5%. The official cause, person-to-person transmission of a novel form of a type of virus called coronavirus, an organism listed in textbooks as causing mild upper respiratory symptoms or the common cold. Officials and the media have studiously avoided mentioning any possible connection with the stealthy installation of 5G antennas, first in large cities and then in smaller towns. These antennas are deliberately inconspicuous, hardly noticeable on city streets. A large portion of these deaths, 43% or higher, have occurred in nursing homes or long-term care facilities. The elderly are the most vulnerable, with an average age at death of 79 years. Nearly all victims have comorbidities such as obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease. Which means they are probably taking several toxic drugs, like metformin for diabetes, ACE2 inhibitors for high blood pressure, and statin drugs to lower cholesterol. According to Silvio Brusafero, president of the Italian Higher Institute, Italian medical records indicate that there may be only two people who died from coronavirus in Italy, who did not present other pathologies. In the early days of the illness, many argued that the threat of coronavirus was exaggerated. In March, Stanford professor John Ioannidis claimed that health officials were severely overreacting to coronavirus, suggesting that the response to the coronavirus pandemic may be a fiasco in the making, because we are making seismic decisions based on utterly unreliable data. A report from March 9, 2020, shows deaths attributed to COVID at 56 per day, versus malaria at 2,000 per day and TB at 3,000 per day, hardly a mortality rate that justifies pandemic status, especially as physicians report receiving pressure to write COVID as the cause of death on death certificates. Hospitals have ample reason to list COVID as a cause for admission. They receive $13,000 from Medicare when they list a patient labeled as COVID, compared to only $4,600 for simple pneumonia. If the patient is put on a ventilator, Medicare pays the hospital $39,000. These financial incentives made it easy to argue that the COVID-19 incident and mortality rates were inflated. Early analyses of the U.S. death rate claimed a virtually non-existent increase in the number of U.S. deaths during the first 17 weeks of 2020 compared with the same period in 2019. But using more complete CDC data reveals that over a 12-week period, February through April, COVID claimed more lives than did accidents, stroke, diabetes, suicide, and other conditions. COVID was third in the list of leading causes of death in the United States during the 12-week period. The overall U.S. death rate was 4-5% higher than it was in the same period in 2019. Some have claimed that COVID deaths are mostly iatrogenic, that is, caused by the medical care patients receive and by the many toxic drugs they are taking. Typically, a COVID patient receives the antiviral remdesivir and is put on a ventilator. Like AZT for AIDS patients, remdesivir was developed to treat another disease, hepatitis C, for which it did not work as hoped, and dusted off to give to COVID patients. Adverse effects include respiratory failure and organ impairment, low albumin, low potassium, low red blood cell count, low platelet count, gastrointestinal distress, elevated liver enzymes, and reaction at the site of injection. In the early days of the pandemic, the media reported a rush to produce enough ventilators to satisfy the expected demand for them. But the much-hyped ventilator turned out to be a death sentence. According to one analysis, among patients 66 years and older hospitalized in the New York City region, those put on ventilators had a 97.2% mortality rate. In an April 22, 2020, article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, an analysis of 5,700 COVID patients hospitalized between March 1 and April 4 found that the overall death rate was 21%, but it rose to 88% for those who received mechanical ventilation. Bad medical care was not the only factor that contributed to the high death rate, the other was almost certainly terror and loneliness. When tagged with a diagnosis of COVID, either from a putative positive test result or no test at all, patients often found themselves locked up against their wills in elder care facilities and shut off from the outside world, no visits from family or friends permitted. Although many argue that the rates of illness blamed on the coronavirus have been inflated, and that COVID is no worse than a bad case of the flu, the possibility exists that the numbers have been underreported. Many suffer illness and never report it, minorities and those living in poverty, but also those who mistrust the medical system, and we have no idea how many are really getting sick in China or in countries formerly of the communist world. The PCR tests give false positives, but also false negatives, which means that many may suffer a mild form of the illness without a diagnosis. More important, it is clear that symptoms of COVID are not the same as those of the ordinary flu. Autopsy reports have found that the lungs of COVID victims contain microscopic blood clots, something that does not happen in flu patients. In larger blood vessels of the lungs, the number of blood clots is similar among COVID and flu patients. However, capillaries in COVID patients have 9 times more blood clots than do those in flu victims. The capillaries are in the small air sacs that allow oxygen to pass into the bloodstream and carbon dioxide to move out. Actually, pathologists are finding clots in almost every organ. The damage, of course, is blamed on the wily virus. The novel coronavirus is a master of disguise and uses a number of tools to infect our cells and replicate. According to Professor Mauro Giacca of King's College London, COVID often leaves lungs completely unrecognizable. What you find in the lungs of people who have stayed with the disease for more than a month before dying is something completely different from normal pneumonia, influenza, or the SARS virus. You see massive thrombosis. There is a complete disruption of the lung architecture. In some lights, you can't even distinguish that it used to be a lung. There are large numbers of very big fused cells which are virus positive with as many as 10, 15 nuclei, he reported. I am convinced this explains the unique pathology of COVID. This is not a disease caused by a virus which kills cells, which has profound implications for therapy. The viruses, of course, are exosomes trying to remove toxins from the lung cells, but they are apparently no match for serious EMR poisoning, which seems to completely disrupt the structure of lung cells. A key symptom of COVID is prolonged and progressive hypoxia, meaning that the body is starved for oxygen. This happens when the hemoglobin molecule releases its iron molecule. Unattached iron in the bloodstream is reactive and toxic, but normally iron is tucked away in the hemoglobin molecule. The iron is caged, so to speak, and carried around safely by hemoglobin. Vitamin C has an important role to play in cleaning up rampaging iron ions. Without the iron ion, hemoglobin can no longer bind to oxygen, so cannot carry oxygen to the cells. Meanwhile, the released iron does its reactive damage everywhere in the body. Damage to the lungs shows up in CT scans. The kidneys release hormones like erythropoietin, which tell your bone marrow to ramp up production of hemoglobin. The conventional explanation for the release of iron from hemoglobin is the action of glycoproteins in the coronavirus, but the action of 5G's millimeter waves is an equally good explanation, especially those at 60 GHz, which disrupt oxygen molecules. An interesting observation about lung malfunction in COVID patients is that it is bilateral, both lungs at the same time, whereas ordinary pneumonia typically affects only one lung. What kind of virus knows to attack both lungs? A study from Wuhan showed that more than one-third of coronavirus patients had neurologic symptoms including dizziness, headaches, impaired consciousness, skeletal muscle injury, and loss of smell and taste, and more rarely seizures and stroke. This is not your normal flu, this is a serious disease. Moreover, in late March, reports of COVID deaths in infants began to appear. In the early months, the disease mostly afflicted the elderly, but doctors are observing an increase in an inflammatory system called Kawasaki disease, which afflicts children and teenagers. Called pediatric multi-system inflammatory syndrome temporally associated with COVID, it is diagnosed on the basis of symptoms. These symptoms include high fever, rash on trunk and groin, extremely red eyes, dry cracked red lips and a strawberry red swollen tongue, redness and extensive peeling of the hands and feet, and swollen lymph nodes. Severe abdominal pain and gastrointestinal symptoms, inflammation of the heart muscle, and markers of cardiac injury are other typical symptoms of Kawasaki disease. However, ironically, the overall death rate among children has declined during the pandemic lockdown, from 700 deaths per week to well under 500 by mid-April and throughout May, a change attributed to parents not keeping their children up with draconian vaccination schedules. Since remdesivir gave disappointing results, health officials are seeking other remedies. One suggestion is dexamethasone, a potent steroid that can shrink the brain. Dexamethasone makes sense if COVID is an inflammation rather than an infection. In fact, one of the first things medical students learn is that steroids like dexamethasone make infections worse. Since dexamethasone may make COVID better, this demonstrates that the illness can't be an infection. Another proposed treatment is the drug Haldol, haloperidol, sometimes called vitamin H. Haldol is one of the most potent antipsychotic medications in existence. It puts the patient into a kind of drooling stupor. Doctors and scientists from France report serious effects when nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, such as ibuprofen are given to COVID patients. NSAIDs can cause internal bleeding, as do ACE inhibitor blood pressure medications. Official policy states that no coronavirus drug is universally safe and effective and discourages non-toxic or holistic treatments, but the lack of successful treatments from mainstream medicine has patients seeking alternatives. A report at the end of March brought attention to the work of Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, a New York physician who claims to have treated almost 700 coronavirus patients with 100% success using a malaria drug called hydroxychloroquine sulfate with supplemental zinc, a treatment that costs only $20 over a period of 5 days. Success is probably due to the patient receiving zinc and sulfur. A study published on May 22 with great media attention in both The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine claimed that the treatment was useless and warned that it could possibly cause death. But on June 4, The Lancet retracted the study and apologized to its readers. The study was withdrawn because the company that provided data would not provide full access to the information for a third-party peer review. Based on this development, we can no longer vouch for the veracity of the primary data sources. Dr. David Brownstein reports no hospitalizations in 85 patients diagnosed with either COVID or suspected COVID using vitamins A, C, and D, hydrogen peroxide, and iodine, while advising patients to avoid the flu vaccine. Ozone is another promising therapy. Other proposed alternative treatments include acetazolamide, altitude sickness drug, hydrogen peroxide IV, vitamin C IV, hyperbaric oxygen, hydrogen gas, and chlorine dioxide, but none of these are available in hospitals. After Memorial Day, COVID hotspots flared in Arizona, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Florida, which officials blamed on relaxed mitigation efforts, having fun at the beach or visiting bars, not wearing face masks, and not practicing social distancing. According to one official, there are certain counties where a majority of the people who are tested positive in that county are under the age of 30, and this typically results from people going to bars. Are these new cases simply due to increased testing with many false positives? Or to the wily virus infecting people with person-to-person transmission? Or to the continued deployment of 5G technology to smaller cities and to the Southwest, and longer exposure to 5G as the weeks and months go by? In mid-June, government agencies could point to an increase in cases in Texas, Alabama, and Virginia. The findings indicate that the risk for large second waves of outbreaks remains low if communities continue to implement cautious, incremental planned reopenings that limit crowding and travel to non-essential businesses. Without vigilance in masking, hygiene and disinfection, certain southern counties will remain high risk. Health officials warned that opening states too soon could have disastrous consequences. In early July, Texas reversed course and mandated masks. Although increased testing with the useless PCR test has undoubtedly generated higher numbers of COVID cases, hospitalizations have also increased. The curve has not flattened, it's going up again. Hospitalizations have also gone up in California, in spite of strict masking and social distancing measures there since early in the year. Sweden initially appeared as a bright spot among nations by foregoing a mandatory lockdown, with factories, businesses, bars, and restaurants remaining open, and a lower illness and death rate than other European nations. Whereas tourism came to a halt in the rest of Europe, it flourished in Sweden. However, case numbers and deaths began to rise in April, with the total number of deaths now over 5,000. Was this because Sweden failed to follow lockdown and mask mandates? Or was it the rollout of 5G, beginning in March? An April 6 article stated, Sweden is in the process of introducing super-fast 5G mobile telecoms networks, giving users several times faster web speeds compared with existing 4G technology. Sweden's first COVID death was March 10. The fact that no explosion of cases occurred in large cities after the Memorial Day protests has puzzled health officials. Areas of unrest like New York, Chicago, Minneapolis, and Washington, D.C. did not see any increase in cases even though thousands of protesters did not wear masks nor practice social distancing. Of the 13 cities involved, only Phoenix saw an increase in cases and hospitalizations, which officials blamed on a decision to end Arizona's stay-at-home order and ease restrictions on businesses. Arizona residents who were cooped up for 6 weeks flooded Phoenix-area bar districts, ignoring social distancing guidelines. The wily coronavirus apparently zeroed in on these law-abiding citizens, but not on protesters crowding the streets. The official government policies for curtailing COVID are self-isolation, social distancing, hand-washing, surface cleaning, environmental hygiene, and face masks, because coronavirus can spread by just talking or breathing. The only recommended treatment for those in an acute stage of infection is ventilation. Many have pointed out that the pores in even the best face masks, even the N95 respirators, are 10 times larger than any virus. A study published in May 2020 in Emerging Janefectious Diseases reviewed the evidence for the effectiveness of non-pharmaceutical personal protective measures and environmental hygiene measures in non-healthcare settings. The evidence from 14 randomized controlled trials of these measures did not find that hand washing, environmental hygiene, or use of face masks had any effect on reducing transmission of so-called infectious diseases. What's more, labels on boxes of masks specifically warn that the masks will not provide any protection against COVID, coronavirus, or other viruses or contaminants. Moreover, wearing a mask can cause serious adverse health effects, including headaches, increased airway resistance, carbon dioxide accumulation, and hypoxia, especially the tight-fitting N95 respirator mask. In one study, one-third of healthcare workers wearing the N95 respirator mask developed headaches and 60% required pain medications for relief. Wearing a mask can cause a reduction in blood oxygenation, hypoxia, or an elevation in blood CO2, hypercapnia. The N95 mask, if worn for hours, can reduce blood oxygenation as much as 20%, which can lead to loss of consciousness. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, warns that masks risk creating a low-oxygen environment and are not effective in preventing disease. Recently, two boys in China fell dead wearing masks while running during physical education classes. Nevertheless, Los Angeles officials have decreed that Angelenos must wear a face covering while outdoors. The new law requires face coverings for walking, running, cycling, scooting, roller skating, skateboarding, and all outdoor activities except for those on the water. A recent review of the science relevant to COVID social policy concluded that masks and respirators don't work. No randomized controlled trial study with verified outcome shows a benefit for healthcare workers or community members in households to wearing a mask or respirator. There is no such study. There are no exceptions. Likewise, no study exists that shows a benefit from a broad policy to wear masks in public. Furthermore, if there were any benefit to wearing a mask due to their blocking power against droplets and aerosol particles, then there should be more benefit from wearing a respirator, N95, compared with a surgical mask, yet several large meta-analyses, and all the RCT, randomized controlled trials, prove that there is no such relative benefit. As for social distancing, health officials have put a guilt trip on the whole world by warning that asymptomatic carriers, those who carry the virus but have no symptoms of disease, could fuel the spread of the disease by stealth. An article published at greenmedinfo.com lists 13 studies showing that social distancing increases mortality in heart patients and those with diabetes, causes depression, and generally shortens life. Moreover, such policies do no good. In June, Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove, head of the WHO's Emerging Diseases and Zoonosis Unit, announced, "From the data we have, it still seems to be rare that an asymptomatic person actually transmits onward to a secondary individual." As for environmental sanitation, some of the guidelines border on the ridiculous. One article suggests that flushing the toilet without a lid could spread coronavirus. The theory is that through flushing one's stool down the toilet, it gets aerosolized into the air. Obviously, you can't transfer the virus to yourself, so it's not a big deal if you watch the contents of your toilet get flushed away. And members of your household have already been exposed to your viruses, so the real risk is for those who invite groups of strangers to watch their stool get flushed down the toilet. Citizens are warned to refrain from this dangerous habit. Even though the science does not support social distancing and the use of masks as a way to control disease, school officials are seriously proposing masks and social distancing for grade schoolers when they return to the classroom in September. The school district of New Albany, Ohio, has taken such policies even further. In addition to masks and social distancing, the school district would require each student to wear an electronic beacon to track their location to within a few feet throughout the day. The device will record where students sit in each classroom, show to whom they meet and talk, and reveal how they gather in groups. These devices could also be used on younger students who do not have smartphones. To compile all the data from the tracking beacons, the schools will need the kind of powerful Wi-Fi service that only 5G, mounted inside the buildings, can supply. Without the virus theory, and even with the virus theory, masks, social distancing, and lockdown make no sense. Ironically, the advent of 5G and EMFs from cell phones and other devices gives us good reason to avoid crowded situations. Take choir practice, with a few dozen people in close quarters, most with cell phones in their pockets and possibly a cell phone tower in the church steeple. This is the perfect situation for creating illness in electrically sensitive individuals. Think meatpacking plants with hundreds of people standing at close quarters, all with cell phones, possibly with 5G installed inside the building to track product, and the added electro-smog stress of conveyor belts and the constant whirring electrical machinery. Workers in small plants, typically located in more rural areas and lacking conveyor belts and other electrical equipment, will be less vulnerable. Think schools, office buildings, universities, and stadiums, where 5G is planned, and indeed has been installed covertly under the guise of disinfecting during the coronavirus lockdown. The new wave of illness predicted in September is likely, with students going back to classrooms, newly wired for 5G and again, most with cell phones. Or imagine tens of thousands crowded into a stadium, now fitted out with 5G so everyone can use their phones. Verizon is building its 5G ultra-wideband network to support transformational changes across multiple industries including sports and entertainment, said Kyle Malady, Verizon's chief technology officer. This next-generation technology can enhance the fan experience with the potential to revolutionize the way sports are viewed and played. Faster download speeds, higher bandwidth and lower latency on 5G-enabled mobile devices with Verizon's 5G ultra-wideband service is just the beginning. Outbreaks of illness in factories, schools, theaters, and stadiums are sure to happen, and will appear to confirm the contagious virus theory. Health officials who have predicted a second wave in September will have the satisfaction of being right, and the justification to proceed with their promised solution, a vaccine.